everybody, and welcome back to Fueling Forward Friday. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner. Today's episode, I will be answering questions you all have submitted to me beforehand. And if you would like to submit any questions in the future, you can do so at my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast and happy Friday. I hope everyone's having a great week. Last week, Nick and I road tripped from LA back to Colorado for my younger brother's wedding, and it snowed the entire time that we were home, which I actually kind of liked because when we moved to LA, we missed out on winter, which I wasn't too upset about, but it was kind of nice to get just like a week of winter. We brought our dog. She's a Bernedoodle. Her name's Charlie. She's obsessed with the snow, so she had a great time. And I actually got to run some of my favorite trails out there in the snow, which normally I don't like, but I enjoyed it. So, it was kind of a nice trip home. Let's see. So this week, like I said, Q&A with me. And I wanted to start with my random thought of the day, the week, I should say. I heard the story on NPR when I was in my car, and they were talking to the woman who did the Appalachian Trail in the fastest known time, and they were asking her about her nutrition, and she said that she was eating bread and goldfish, and the NPR interviewer's first comment was, "Wow, that's so unhealthy. I thought you'd be saying things like broccoli, etc." And I was like, okay, first of all, this is showing how little people know about sports nutrition. If I were eating broccoli any time around a run, that just wouldn't go well for me or for anyone, really. But I also was kind of disappointed that instead of saying like, "Wow, that's so amazing, that sounds so hard, you're so incredible," the first thing she commented on was her food choices. And I think that's so common, especially for female athletes. People really feel like they can comment on things that we're eating, things we should eat, things we shouldn't eat, acting surprised when we have things like desserts or goldfish or chips or whatever, like, "Oh, you eat those kinds of foods?" And I think there is just this idea that eating to support your training has to look very quote-unquote clean and healthy and vegetables and fruits. And that's kind of the traditional idea of healthy that most of us have from health class, you know, growing up, or what we've been told from parents or textbooks or whatever it is. But sports nutrition is so different. You know, the eating healthy, the salads, the fruits and veggies, that's great for people who aren't really training, maybe live a more sedentary lifestyle. Whereas for sports nutrition, the primary focus is fueling your body for performance. And those two things do not look the same. And something I tell my high school athletes all the time is that fueling and eating healthy are not always the same thing. And you can eat really healthy, but you can end up underfueled because of it, which is really confusing for a lot of athletes. And so, again, I just think that this particular interview, which was about this incredible feat, being the first woman to do this, turned into this conversation about food. And I just feel, as a society, we can do better in those situations. So just my little random thought of the week. Last thing before I get into today's questions, I wanted to remind you guys that I have my Fueling Forward newsletters if you want to subscribe to those. The third Sunday Brunch Club will be coming out this Sunday, and in that I always include my personal weekly plan for my meals and my snacks, including recipes that I'm going to use. So that's a really fun place to find that. And I have some exciting announcements coming up this month that I can't wait to share with you guys. So I will definitely be posting that in the newsletters and on here as well. And speaking of my newsletter, I have a section in there called Science Corner, where I break down a nutrition myth. And so it was really fun to see when I looked through the questions that had been submitted for today's episode that there was actually a question that really overlapped with that science corner, which was about how eggs have cholesterol and we've all been told not to eat eggs and should we really do that? That's kind of what I talked about in that newsletter. And so I got a question about that today that I thought would be really fun to share because I do get this question quite often. Okay, this question is from Hope. She says, I am 23 years old and found out that my total cholesterol is really high, and so is my LDL. My provider gave me the blanket recommendations to eat less red meat and cheese, of which I eat very little to none, exercise more, and eat more fiber, which I already do. I have a family history of high cholesterol and heart disease, which makes me worried about my results, but I've also heard that chronic stress, underfueling, and not eating enough carbs can contribute to elevated cholesterol. Can you please give some insight into how other factors may influence cholesterol and how I may be able to distinguish between high cholesterol due to genetic predisposition versus potential underfueling? How much would reducing my intake of saturated fats and dietary cholesterol really influence my blood cholesterol levels? And are there any other blood tests that you would recommend checking, such as apolipoprotein B? Really great question, Hope. And I think you really hit on an important point that I try to educate athletes about as well. Underfueling can cause high cholesterol levels. So low energy availability and REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport, commonly cause what is called dyslipidemia, so elevated cholesterol levels. And this is a protective mechanism that our body puts into place as a way to try to help keep our body functioning in this state of essentially starvation. And so we do see higher cholesterol levels. Our body is sort of trying to, you know, hold on to things as much as it can. And so that's typically something that we see. That's a newer finding in athletes with REDS and low energy availability. And it's frustrating because, you know, doctors tell these athletes, essentially eat less. Eat less carbs, eat less red meat, you know, cutting out these things that for a lot of runners provide a lot of their daily calories, a lot of the nutrients that they need to support their training. And that actually makes the problem worse. And another thing that's frustrating for me when doctors say that is they don't ask the athlete, what are you already eating? So Hope gave a great example where her doctor said, cut out red meat and cheese. Well, she's already not eating those things, so that's not really a helpful suggestion. And, you know, there are certainly some doctors who have good knowledge when it comes to nutrition, but for the most part, medical school only requires maybe one nutrition class, and it's very basic level. So I, as a dietitian, often am trying to provide more helpful guidelines and information to people who come to me panicked because their doctor said, oh my gosh, I need to cut out all these things. You know, what am I supposed to be doing? And so, you know, first and foremost, I think it's important to consider health risks in general. Typically, runners who are already very active and who generally tend to eat pretty well, their overall risk for adverse cardiovascular events is going to be a little bit lower. So even if cholesterol levels are higher, that doesn't guarantee that you're at a higher risk for adverse cardiovascular events. And, you know, anytime I'm talking about this stuff, just remember this is not medical advice. Everyone is different. Of course, work with your doctor. But there is certainly a genetic component to cholesterol. So I'm a good example of that. I actually have elevated cholesterol. I have since I was 19. You know, my dad and his dad have high cholesterol. It's something that runs in our family. And, you know, it's funny because when doctors are like, oh, your cholesterol is a little high, do you eat well? Do you exercise? I'm like, yeah, I'm a former professional runner and a dietitian. I don't really think I could be doing anything better than I already am. And my younger brother, who doesn't do as much, well, he does a lot of training as a firefighter now, but back in the day, he didn't train as much as I did. He certainly doesn't eat the way that I do. He doesn't really eat anything green, has great cholesterol. You know, that's just kind of how it is sometimes. And as frustrating as that can be, you know, just keeping an eye on things, making sure that you are eating enough to support your training. Those are all things that can really help keep your cholesterol levels in check. Another question that I had gotten was about eggs. You know, should I not eat eggs? Is that something that I should avoid because my cholesterol is high? eating dietary cholesterol like eggs actually does not contribute to total cholesterol levels. We used to think that, you know, back in the 60s, it was said like you shouldn't eat more than 300 milligrams of cholesterol daily, and an egg usually has 300 to 400 milligrams in a yolk. So you can be getting a lot of cholesterol from eggs. And I think that's why they were sort of the scapegoat of, if you have high cholesterol, stop eating these things. But the reality is that our body does need cholesterol. We use cholesterol to form our cell membranes. We use it to make hormones. And so if we are getting enough cholesterol from our diet, our body is actually less likely to make it itself. And so total cholesterol levels aren't really impacted. Our body will just make less if we're getting it from our diet. The things that impact cholesterol levels the most from a dietary standpoint would be things like a sedentary lifestyle, you know, eating an excessive amount of saturated fats, you know, eating excessive amounts of refined carbohydrates or sugar. But that's not always the case for athletes. Those are sometimes things that need to be done to meet energy needs, which are typically what would more likely cause high cholesterol levels in athletes. So, like I kind of mentioned earlier, sports nutrition and general population health are just really different. And if you are somebody who is struggling with elevated cholesterol levels, then that may be something where you need to figure out what would be the best approach for you, make sure that you're eating enough to support your training. In terms of testing other things like the apolipoprotein B, what that is that's looking at the type of cholesterol that you have. There's a specific type of cholesterol, this apolipoprotein B, I'm just going to call it ApoB for now to make it shorter. It's a stickier type of cholesterol. So for some people who have higher amounts of ApoB, they are at a higher risk for plaque buildup in the arteries. So that's definitely something too that you can take a look at if you have a family history, if there's genetic component there, to determine what your risk really is. But generally speaking, especially for young, otherwise healthy runners, if I see an elevated cholesterol, I will definitely take a look at genetics, but that's kind of a sign for me to take a look at potential underfueling. I will also say for me personally, you know, the cholesterol levels that my doctor, who is more in the realm of sports medicine, has said, given my lifestyle choices, the level of cholesterol that they're looking at for me, knowing my genetic history, they're not as concerned with levels being elevated. So again, talking to your doctor, finding a sports medicine specific practitioner who can look at this through a better lens for you and help you understand what might be some predisposition here, what could be caused by, you know, underfueling or overtraining, and potentially what do we need to do to monitor these things moving forward, just to keep an eye on them. You know, one last thing I'll say is alcohol consumption can really impact cholesterol. So if you're somebody who has high cholesterol, you know, actually removing alcohol can help with that. So that's something else to take a look at if your levels are at a point where you're concerned. Okay, this next question says, what should athletes returning from injury and not training for a long period of time think about when it comes to nutrition and fueling? It's so hard to not think about body changes and sometimes weight changes that come from long periods of inactivity or less activity than your body is used to. This is such a fantastic question. If you haven't already listened to Emma Coburn's episode from last week, I highly encourage you to do that because she talks a lot about what she does in the off season or when she is injured. And one of the first things that Emma Coburn does is actually try to allow herself to gain weight. It's a protective thing. When you're coming off of a huge period of training, your body is typically in a bit of a deficit. It allows your body to really rest, recover, and heal. The same thing goes for injuries. I think a big mistake I often see athletes make is that they cut back on their fueling because they say, well, I'm not training as much, so I shouldn't be eating as much. And they start to kind of move away from foods like carbohydrate-rich foods and more towards color, so fruits and vegetables, because they say, well, I'm not really training. But in reality, most injured runners I know, even if they're pretty injured, they are doing some type of cross training. And the amount of energy that you are burning at rest with an injury can be up to 1,000 calories a day greater than when you're at rest, not injured. So Activity level aside, just being injured alone increases your energy needs from when you're not injured. If you add cross-training on top of that, your energy needs sometimes are even higher when you're injured and cross-training than they are when you're not injured and running, which can be very counterintuitive. I understand that for a lot of runners. I would say another thing that I see, like I said earlier, is that we start removing carbohydrates or cutting back on carbohydrates. So a lot of times injuries happen when your body is breaking down. And a main cause of breakdown in runners is not getting enough carbs. Our body has to find that fuel somewhere else. We're more likely to break down tissue, like muscle, to use for fuel, and that causes worse or weakened muscle contractions, which can cause muscle tissue injury. So especially soft tissue injuries that won't heal, like high hamstring, plantar, you know, even shin splints to a degree, those can be some signs that, hey, maybe we're not fueling well enough with carbohydrates. And being injured, as difficult as it can be, sometimes makes it easier to eat more because you don't have to worry as much about, like, you know, your stomach before runs. You can usually eat quite a bit before you go sit on the bike. And so it can be a good opportunity to actually increase energy stores, energy availability for your body, so that when you do get back to training, your body is able to come back faster and you're not going to re-injure yourself. Another thing, especially with bone stress injuries, the number one predicting factor of bone injury is actually energy intake, not calcium or vitamin D status. I think a lot of runners are like, oh, I'm getting enough calcium so my bones are fine. But bone breakdown activity is increased in states of energy insufficiency. So if we're not eating enough, we are breaking down more bone tissue. We're not rebuilding it as much as we should be or could be if we were eating enough. So that's where that low bone density piece over time can also come into play for runners who are chronically in a deficit. So again, if you have a bone stress injury, considering the fact that we probably need to do some bone density restoration during this period of injury. So we can increase how much we're eating to help increase bone building activity, which will not only help you heal faster, but it will also help increase your bone density as a whole and reduce your risk for future bone stress injuries. So I know that it can be really stressful to continue to eat or even increase what you're eating when you're injured. And I know that there's a fear of body changes, but what I try to remind athletes to focus on is the fact that you're trying to rebuild damaged tissue. You cannot do that if you don't have those building blocks present. And thinking about how difficult it is in this moment to be injured and not to be able to run, and reminding yourself that you might be prolonging that amount of time that you can't run or the amount of time that you're injured if you don't continue to fuel the way that we should. So I know sometimes that can be hard to hear, but just reminding yourself, what's the goal of this period of time when I'm injured? The goal is to heal. The goal is to come back stronger and to be able to continue to run and not end up here again in 6 weeks because we didn't actually heal. Which can happen if you are not fueling when you're injured. And I know, like I said, those body changes can be difficult, but sometimes they are necessary. And I think we as a society have turned any body changes that happen into a negative thing. And it doesn't need to be negative. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's necessary, and it's not always going to happen, right? I mean, of course, there are things that are going to shift a little bit when we're training less and we're maybe eating a little more than we were, but that's not always a bad thing. And again, if you're an athlete who hasn't had a period for a long time and you're injured, this is a great opportunity to work on getting your body back to a healthy place. Injuries happen from excessive breakdown. We want to make sure that we're focused on the rebuilding when we are coming back from an injury. So now what do? If we are injured, how do we fuel? My suggestions are similar to an athlete who is training. Make sure that you are eating 3 full meals a day. You're balancing your plate with carbs, color, and protein. You're eating consistently throughout the day, so you're not going more than 3 to 4 hours without eating. You have balanced snacks with carbs and protein. If you're cross-training, you're fueling before and after your cross-training sessions. And if you're cross training for more than 90 minutes, you do want to bring some fuel with you to have during that cross training session. So whether that's, you know, a gel, a bar, an electrolyte drink with carbs in it, like Scratch or Gatorade, you know, making sure that you're still doing those things when you're injured, just to help you come back faster. And again, you're doing all this work with cross training. I personally feel like when I've been injured, cross training feels like a prison. So I'm not going to want to be back there anytime soon. I'm going to do anything I can to make sure I'm not going back there, and that all of this cross training that I'm doing, I get to use when I come back to running. And the last thing I'll say, just from personal experience and runners that I've worked with, is coming back from an injury, when you start running, it's going to feel hard no matter what. Runners are quick to blame that on, oh my gosh, I've gained weight, that's why this feels so hard. No, it has nothing to do with that. We call it finding your land legs. Coming back from an injury, getting back from biking or swimming or even aqua jogging into running on the ground will always feel very difficult. So don't blame that feeling on weight changes. I know it's easy to do that. Just remind yourself it's going to take a couple of weeks for your body to get used to the impact of full body weight running on the ground. It's going to feel jarring at first, but it will get better. And if you're taking care of your body throughout your injury, you're being smart about your cross training. That's one more thing I would say. You do not need to cross train an excessive amount. For most runners, that does more harm than good when it comes to healing. So being smart about your cross training, being smart about your fueling, continuing to get rest, you know, making sure that you're doing those little things. When you are able to get back to running, that transition will be a lot smoother. I will say I dealt with a stress fracture my fifth year. So between the track season of my fourth year going into my fifth year cross country season, I found out I had a stress fracture in my shin right before I was supposed to start training for fall cross country. I was devastated because I thought this meant that I wouldn't be able to be on the varsity team and travel for cross country. So I spent the whole summer, you know, cross training. I never did more than 90 minutes of cross training. I took a day fully off every single week. I focused on my fueling. I focused on my sleep. And I didn't start running on the ground until August, which is when we start racing. Within the first two races, I had made the varsity team. I ended up finishing that season the second runner on the team that was runners-up at NCAAs. And I know for a fact that if I hadn't been smart about my cross training and my fueling, I never would have found my way back to that level of running that quickly. So it can be done. Think about big picture, long term, what your goals are and how you can best support those during your time injured. And that can help you navigate those hard days where you're feeling stressed about body changes. This is a great question. This says, how long after you wake up should you eat breakfast? Is it bad to drink coffee, wait an hour, and then eat? This is such a great question, and I'm so glad that you asked this, because this is probably the first thing that I work on with all of the athletes that I am working with. So when we wake up in the morning, our body produces cortisol, which is a stress hormone that helps us wake up. We need some amount of cortisol to wake us up in the morning. We have something called a cortisol awakening response. However, we don't want that cortisol to continue to raise indefinitely. If we continue to allow that cortisol level to creep up throughout the morning, then we do see our overall cortisol levels tend to be on the higher side. That can eventually impact hormone levels, that can cause more muscle breakdown, that can increase anxiety, that can also cause some adrenal fatigue, where our adrenal glands are burning through all of our resources like sodium, potassium, magnesium, which can really impact how we feel and how we perform. So all that to say, if we wake up and we don't eat, that is one thing that causes those cortisol levels to continue to climb. If we train, that increases our cortisol levels, and drinking caffeine increases our cortisol levels. So if we wake up in the morning, we drink our coffee, and we go out and train without eating anything, we are sort of creating the perfect storm for stress hormones to shoot through the roof and really impact our recovery, how we feel, our energy levels, our hormones, all sorts of things that may not feel any different in the moment, but certainly add up over time and over the course of a training block. So my suggestion is to make sure that you're eating within an hour of waking up. You know, ideally a little sooner, ideally maybe 30 minutes of waking up. But I know everyone is different. And the main concern I hear from people is, well, I don't feel hungry at that point. A lack of hunger first thing in the morning is actually a sign that your body is running on stress hormones. So that would actually be a situation in which I would encourage you to kind of push through that and get something in. If you are running first thing in the morning, you know, just trying to get something small with your coffee so that you're not just drinking coffee by itself. This could be, you know, a few graham crackers, a banana, a honey stinger waffle, even a glass of juice, just something that's going to give you something to kind of slow down that effect of caffeine. If you are not running first thing in the morning and you're eating more of a meal, but you don't feel hungry yet for a meal, you could do a small thing like a muffin. So I have some of my athletes make like morning muffins that they can have with their coffee. So even if they don't feel hungry, it's still enjoyable to eat and it kind of helps mitigate that increase in cortisol. But ideally, I would love to see people eating something with carbs, protein, fats, and color. So kind of a balanced breakfast with that coffee. The other thing that I encourage athletes to do is get electrolytes or sodium, especially first thing in the morning before you have coffee. This is also something that can really support your adrenal glands, which are what is actually producing that cortisol. So it just gives them extra resources so we don't experience that burnout. So the first thing that I do when I wake up is I make a glass of water that has salt and lemon in it, which is just, I would say, like a poor man's electrolyte drink. You could do any type of electrolyte drink. You could do a noon tablet, some Element, you know, whatever you like. I love the Scratch unsweetened hydration first thing in the morning. It tastes like lemon water. It's so good. But something like that that you're drinking, you know, first thing, and also before you run, this is something in general that can help with morning training, but just getting an electrolyte drink in or water with salt in first thing in the morning, also before you have your coffee, can give your adrenal glands some support, kind of help you wake up, help you feel a little bit better. But those are some general rules that I try to give my athletes. Like I said, if you're not hungry and you really want that coffee, I'm not telling you not to drink that. That's the thing I look forward to the most every single day. When I go to bed at night, I like get excited thinking about my morning coffee. So listen, I'm not going to be someone who's going to tell you not to drink your morning coffee. But my parameters are have some water with electrolytes and have some type of food first or with my coffee so that I'm not just getting that hit of caffeine immediately and just shooting my cortisol through the roof first thing in the morning. Okay, this next question says, hi, Maddie. Thanks so much for all that you do through your podcast, blog, and media posts. You're making a huge difference in so many people's lives through the amazing education and support that you provide. My question is about how to manage situations where we are unable to fuel as frequently as would be ideal. I'm a marathon runner. I'm also a young physician in the middle of my residency, and sometimes that makes it really hard to eat in that every 2 to 4 hour window. I might be working with patients or in a procedure, and therefore I'm in an environment and situation where it may be actually impossible for me to fuel for quite a few hours. Do you have recommendations on how to navigate this? Sarah. Sarah, thank you so much. That was really kind of you to say, and thank you for the work that you're doing. I know being a physician is incredibly time-consuming, incredibly difficult, so thank you for all that you're doing. And I have quite a few runners who are healthcare workers, and this is a pretty common concern, and I see a lot of my healthcare practitioners charting through lunch or, you know, finishing up things because the day is so busy and just not taking any time for themselves to eat. So while there are certainly situations, like if you're in an operating room, of course you can't be eating during those times. But what I try to work with my practitioners on is making sure that you have something accessible so that if you are, you know, working through lunch or charting through, you know, your break, you still have an opportunity to get something in. So A couple things that we do is just have what I call like emergency snack items that are always next to your desk. Have a drawer that has, you know, packets of trail mix, that has some bars, non-perishable items that you can stock up on at work and bring with you so that you always have access to them. I think if you have like a break room or a place where you feel comfortable leaving some things in the office, sort of treating it like you would doing a restock in your fridge at home, right? So making sure that you are stocking up on your work break room with snacks that you have available throughout the week. So some of my recommendations for those items would be RX bars, Kind protein bars, regular Clif bars. I love the Bobo's oat, like filled oat things. Those are really tasty. Peanut butter filled pretzels are great. Again, trail mixes. I love the single serve packs from Trader Joe's, or just like a big bag of trail mix that you can dip your hand in every now and then from Trader Joe's too. I think with my healthcare workers, they can like rip a bag open and tip it back. That tends to be the easiest thing, those little single serve bags. So things like that. And then if you have a refrigerator at work, some refrigerated items that I recommend bringing would be drinkable options like the Chobani drinkable yogurts or Core Power shakes can always be really helpful. Cheese sticks, you know, Sargento snack packs, which have some cheese in there. Perfect bars, or the mini perfect bars even, those are great. And then maybe some fruit like some apples or cuties or something like that. So if you're able to stock up, those are some easy options. If you are not and you are caught in a schedule where you just can't get away, my suggestion is do your best with the time that you know you have. So if you know you can get in a good breakfast in the morning before you leave, you know, definitely prioritize and make sure that is a really substantial, solid meal. Maybe you have another snack as you're walking into the door from the parking lot, just so you have a little extra on board. So maybe it's even sooner than that 2 to 4 hour window. That's okay too. Setting a reminder too on if you have like an Apple Watch or a phone, if you're somebody who just gets caught up in what you're doing and you forget to take a break, having something that physically prompts you to be like, okay, wait, I need to pause for a second. And in reality, eating a snack can take 2 minutes. So it really doesn't have to be super time consuming. It doesn't require you to have a ton of time, but just being intentional about carving out 2 minutes every day, you know, scheduling it into your calendar, setting that reminder on your phone, planning it around cases. So if you get there in the morning and you see, these are the times I'm going to be in the OR, these are the times I'm going to be meeting with patients or rounding, you know, putting in your schedule, this is when I want to eat, just so you know, to be on the lookout for, okay, it's 1 o'clock, I have 5 minutes here, I'm gonna go grab my bag of trail mix and eat that really quick. And so again, I know it's not gonna be perfect, and I know that you're doing the absolute best that you can, but just trying to remove as many barriers as you can from eating in those times that you are able to eat, and then just giving yourself grace, knowing that there are times where it's not gonna be perfect, it's not gonna be great, but just being mindful the next day, maybe after your shift, if you know you didn't maybe eat enough on that shift, being really mindful of, okay, today I'm going to be really intentional about trying to get extra fuel in. And again, thank you for all of your hard work. We really appreciate people like you, Sarah. All right, so this last question says, hi, I'm in half marathon training and have a long commute to work several days a week and eat breakfast at 5:45 a.m. I then get hungry around 10 a.m. and am struggling to find a good snack. I already carry my lunch and post-run snacks, so I'm looking for something easy to carry and prep. I already pre-cook for 3 lunches, which is laborious enough. Thank you so much. Yes, so totally understand that. I know it can be super challenging when you're away from home all day to pack enough food. So I think kind of alluding to what I said for the previous question that Sarah had asked about being a healthcare worker and trying to find time to eat, if you have a way to bring something with you to work on, let's say Monday, where you can stack up on items for snacks during the week, that is one less thing that you have to bring with you every day and one less thing that you have to plan and prep. So falling back on some pre-made options might be the best option for you. So getting, like I said, a box of RX bars or Kind protein bars or a box of Clif bars. You know, those bags of cuties right now are so cheap or on sale at a lot of places. So getting a bag of cuties and bringing those with you to pair with a bar, so we've got, you know, carb, color, and protein in there. If you have access to a refrigerator, some of those refrigerated options that you can throw in the fridge at work if you have a space for it. But I would say generally, if you have a desk or a place that you can just put a few snack items for the week, that might be the easiest thing. Not to mention they'll be right next to you, so even if you're busy that day, you can just open your drawer, grab a quick snack, and eat that. Another thing that I would say is for a lot of people who are training, breakfast, especially if we're rushing out the door, may not be big enough. If we're feeling hungry constantly throughout the day, I mean, being hungry at 10 o'clock if you're eating at 5:45 is very understandable, and we should be eating around then anyway because that's outside of that 4-hour window. But generally what I see is if someone's like kind of rushing out the door, breakfast may not be big enough. So this is a good opportunity to use things like overnight oats that you can load up with Greek yogurt and nut butter and, you know, things like that, or making, you know, a smoothie to go with your breakfast, having a breakfast sandwich on a bagel, you know, breakfast burritos, buying those pre-made ones that are frozen that you heat up really quickly, and pairing them with something a little bit more substantial. You know, that's also something that can help with hunger throughout the day. Another strategy that I've used with my athletes who are working really early is, again, this would depend on how much time you have at the office, but having sort of like, I would call it quote unquote breakfast number one at the house around 5:45, and then, you know, breakfast number two in the office, maybe around 9:30 or 10, then you'd have your lunch around 1. And then if you're training after work, you know, you could have your pre-training snack before, you know, in the afternoon, and then your post-training snack, and then dinner when you get home. So kind of spreading things out a little bit more throughout that morning too, making that a little more substantial, especially with an evening or afternoon session, can really help you make sure that you're fueling well enough. One of my other things that I love to bring if I'm packing for the day, I like to put frozen fruit in Greek yogurt. It actually keeps the Greek yogurt cold, and you can get enough variety by getting different types of frozen fruit. So I'll just get like the mixes of frozen fruit, like either the berries or strawberries and bananas or tropical fruit, and then I'll pair that with usually with vanilla Greek yogurt. To get some good flavor in, but that's a great way to keep what you're going to eat cold. I like to put my granola separately because I don't want it to get soggy, but you could also put some like oats or chia seeds in there, almost make it like an overnight oats type thing. That usually holds up pretty well for a snack, doesn't require a ton of prep, and is also really easy for you to bring every day with getting some variety in flavors. Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air in the next Q&A episode, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.